Blog Talk Radio.
Get up again and smile. Get up again and smile.
Good morning, that was Patrick Adams Spire, a local artist here, went to Minneapolis Central. I think he was a year behind me. He might have graduated in 1980, but he's a cool dude, and I appreciate him sending that clip to us for us to use for his show. Good morning. You're at Our Black News. I'm Don Allen. Over there on my right, maybe your left, is Anthony Scott, and in the middle there is Mr. Jonathan Mason. We'd like to welcome everybody and welcome you guys. Thank you, everybody, for showing up, because we have a lot to yak about today.
Absolutely.
You know, guys, we're going to bounce around and bounce back. There's really no set agenda today, as there never is, because, you know, we can pull it together at a drop of a dime.
This is a buffet, Dan. Too much on the plate.
Yeah, there's too much there.
Buffet.
Yeah, and I agree 100%. But I got up this morning, and I was reading social media, and there was a post, and it said, you know, what does defunding the police really mean? What is that about? How does that work? And you guys know already that I have issues with that to begin with, because defunding the police, what does that mean in Minneapolis, for the city of Minneapolis, for the city of St. Paul, for taking the SRO officers out of the school? I mean, who stops a violent incident in a school? So I'm going to lay that on the table first, guys. What are your thoughts?
Real quick, what I'm remembering is, I remember one time when I worked with you over at Harrison Public Education Center. I think you might have been doing the substitute job, but I used to work there full time. Mm-hmm. And if you can't take SROs out of the Harrison Public Education Center, any Federal 4 setting, 3 setting, even high schools. You know, what that looks like, I you know, Don, you hit it on the nose. I really don't know what it looks like as far as the SROs, but who do you call when there is an incident? So, for example, there's a fight at the school, it's getting out of control. There's staff who don't want to get involved, or it's getting really massive. People from outside have came into school. What does that approach look like? Does it look like police coming to the school and just stopping it, or do they have a security guard, some type of plan in place to keep the kids protected? So who knows what it looks like, but I think that was more of a talking point.
Yeah, and I would have to when you look at the overall, you know, cost of the police and the call to defund them, it becomes problematic because, you know, we already know in Minneapolis that there's people shooting up everything every night. There's people getting shot, houses getting shot at. There was a news report on Pier 11 yesterday and the day before yesterday about a lady who lives in Minneapolis that says there's a big bullet hole in her house. And so if you defund the police, or you even hint to that to the masses, those that will do bad are going to do bad.
It's going to be lawless.
Yeah.
You know, and defunding the police, I mean, like Jonathan says, just a talking point. I mean, they need to be in the schools. And the key thing is, you've got to have the right people to do it. Look at North High School, where you got Mr. Adams in there. Okay, he coaches the football. He's on the Minneapolis police. And I don't know if he's an SRO at the school. I don't know if he's, you know, designated with that title. But he's around that school.
Yeah.
And to have people like that, you have to have the right people in these jobs. And this is really where it's all falling down. You need to make sure the funding goes to the right organizations, the right people in those particular jobs. And Mr. Adams is a prime example of the type of officer that you need in these schools to make everybody feel safe in the school. And that's the whole thing.
And you're right on that.
You don't feel safe.
Yeah.
Yep. And Officer Adams, being that he does have a good rapport with the students, that will bring a different type of a relationship with that school. And so when we're having these conversations, do we say, hey, hell, the North football coach, and I'm not sure, he might actually work there as an SRO, but I'm not 100% sure. But with that being said, being that he is a football coach and stuff like that, we need to have officers who are, I would say, privy to students or have the understanding of what it takes to be an SRO and be interacting with them. And that's all I can really say about that.
Yeah, and you know what? I want to get back to the point of the Minneapolis City Council also and the kind of pandering. I call it pandering, and I don't mean to demonize them at all whatsoever, but you have to really be intentional about looking at what comes out of your mouth, what policies you try to shape. Because historically in Minneapolis, from the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights to many other units inside of the city, you know, there are things done a certain way that, you know, don't make any sense to the general public or to those watching closely. And so when you say you're going to defund the police, there's a lot more things to look at it. But the bravado coming out of the city council, certain city councilmen and women, is that, oh, the police are absolutely, we have to defund them, we have to take this and put it over here and fund, you know, you can't send two social workers on a police call. Sorry, it's not going to end
right.
up well.
Right.
You know,
right. Anthony said real quick that it's a talking point. We know it's a talking point. What does it look like? Because they'll say, and this might go into our next section, or segue into our next piece, that you say defund the police, you're saying, then, you know, you might have Donald Trump, he might say something about defunding the police, but then when he mentions, and this is what I think we should be going into, the platinum plan,
yeah,
the left is silent. I don't hear them saying nothing about it. And so these are the things, you know, I can always tell people, defunding the police, what that looks like, and then the wordage or the verbiage out of the Minneapolis City Council should be actually what defunding the police means, diverting the funds to appropriate places and allocate these funds for these people to be able to handle the mental health calls, the various different things that police have to encounter.
Mm-hmm.
We have a major mental health crisis going on. And sometimes I know police officers who say, they didn't call the police over at this house 20 times, right?
yeah.
Okay, for an incident, the guy's doing something, the police get there, he ain't doing it, they ain't got the camera, and it's a mental health situation. Then you can say, all right, go over there. And there's some police who say, shit, I can't, if that's what defund the police means, defund us, shit. but I think that we have to, I think it was more of a talking point. It was during a time where they didn't want to make the decision to actually do the right thing, to arrest the police officers. And that falls on Minneapolis City Council, falls on Jake, you know, and I got love for the dude, but it falls on these individuals, and Don, like you said, who are in these positions of power and are required to make a vote or use their voice as policy and keep doing the wrong thing.
Well, Jonathan, I'm going to ask you, have you heard of this group? I got this big book here. You know, it was really strange when I got this because the mail had already come. Okay, so I was out exercising, and I come back, and here's this big book in my mailbox. And I didn't know, is this something they're sending to me, or did this go to
can you read the title for it?
Yeah, it's called Enough is Enough.
Yep.
150-year performance review of the Minneapolis Police Department by the MPD 150. And that's what I was wondering. Have you heard of this group, MPD 150?
I have never heard of PD 150. And, you know, I'm very familiar with the various groups within Minneapolis. Have not heard them. Are they a pro-police, or are they trying to replace the police? Or what?
They want to defund. They think that they have a defund thing, and it's someone that has something to do with the Bryant community, something, or I can't remember what his name is. Or
Right, we do see these initiatives going on. I hope there's a clear and precise plan in it. But you know, sometimes there's money in grants and stuff to just say, defund the police. Definitely. Give me $10,000. I can walk through the neighborhood passing out flyers talking about defund the police when ain't no shit. Pardon my language. It's Saturday morning.
Yes,
what are you guys actually doing? So now when we have, and I hate, you know, I'm not pubbing anybody, but when we see people come out with real economic plans, we talked about this last week, Don.
Yeah.
When we talk about these economic plans, these proposals, these ROIs that we're starting to do, they won't let me get into city council. I've already demanded them to do the right thing so many times. So when I go in there to do a proposal, here Mason comes. Here Mason comes. And so Tuesday, and this is the reality of it.
Oh,
they
yeah.
might not like me. And so do they not approve my proposals that are wonderfully crafted just because you don't like me because I'm trying to hold your butt accountable? This is what we're dealing with. So these are, you're going to see these groups, Anthony, that say defund the police. Then you ask them, like I do, what's your plan? Next step.
Yeah.
What's the next step?
I want to dovetail off something that Jonathan just said, is that historically in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and these nonprofits or these big nonprofits here, usually in our community, the Black community, they give money to people that they feel comfortable with. And they pick a person that will maybe do, you know, make an effort, but still be cordially and diplomatic with this particular group, politically aligned with this person's group and organization. And that's the politically aligned piece is huge. And so
Right. You're
sitting there and you're going like, okay, so I'm Black. I live in the community. I might be a member of the Green Party. I don't necessarily agree with the Democrats or independent. And you have an agency. If you don't have a connection some way, socially, you know, with these people,
yeah.
they don't fund you. But over the years, you could see how it's killed the Black community in Minneapolis and St. Paul because they keep handing out money to the same group of people. Oh, yeah, and on that point, I want to say congratulations. Not that point. This is something totally separate. I shouldn't connect it. But I'd like to say congratulations to Ms. Janessa Green. She is the new executive director of the Bethany Community Center. Congratulations, Janessa Green. Yeah, but I think
my son's on the board. I should have heard about that earlier.
Yeah. So, you behind that. Now you better call your son and let him know what's up. Yeah, she's a great person. So, getting back to the city of Minneapolis defunding the police and these nonprofit agencies and these agencies led by Black Minnesotans, and I'm not going to say all of them have been a complete disaster, but many of them have contributed to a disaster in our community because, you know, in the past 40 years, we haven't made any millionaires in the community, but, you know, you have people that their bank accounts look pretty good. And again, I have to justify this. I don't care if you make 500 grand, a million, or whatever a year working for a Black nonprofit. Make sure that it's creating those same type of people out in our community. That's my only rule. That's the only rule.
Here's another rule. Let me dovetail off of that. If you're making $500,000, and I said this to Ed Graff, I hold him, that's the Minneapolis superintendent.
Yeah.
I told him the same thing. If you're making $400,000, damn it, Ed, can you bring some change? Can the proficiency numbers go up? Can we get 4 out of 5 Black kids reading, not 1 or 2 out of 5 Black kids graduating but not being able to read? Graduating.
Mm-hmm.
And not being able to do math in a society that can't do if you can't read.
Yeah, and
it might be some big stuff.
You know, I was crushed when I went to the DMV. You know, they have social distancing, so you got to make an appointment and all this other stuff. And so I did, and waited a month later, then went to my appointment. And right in front of me was this 17-18-year-old kid. He probably has just got his license because his parents were with him. And, you know, you got to fill out that little form there when you get your license after you pass the test. And And I'm sitting about 6, 7, 8 feet away waiting for my turn to go up and take a picture for my to renew my license. And he has the form in front of him. He's looking down at it. And he turns to his mom and he pushes it over to her. And says, can you fill this out? Can you fill this out? And his mom says, just fill it. Put right your address. I don't know that. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. And you'd be shocked.
And you're going to put him behind the wheel?
Yeah. You'd be shocked. Well, there's a lot of them behind the wheel.
What does yield mean? Yield?
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure those small sight words, I think he has, and it's the stop, of course, and the green and red light, but it's that form, that document, you know, and that might,
right.
If that doesn't get corrected now, that transfers to his first lease, his first house that he buy if he gets there, his first car.
Oh, yeah.
All that stuff transfers across. It's called a life skill. And
life
I know we were talking. I know we were talking about defunding the police, but I came up in South Minneapolis. Well, I was born in St. Paul. We moved to South Minneapolis in '71 on Portland Avenue, and it was critical that your neighborhood had a relationship with the police that were driving around. You know, it was critical that there was an understanding that everyone is inherently expected to do what's right, okay, period. It was expected that if you were in ninth grade and you opened the emergency door on the back of the bus and jumped out and ran, and that's against the rules because you also got suspended from school, which I did, the police officer would show up at your mom's house out on the front in the front yard saying, hey, Miss Allen, Don and Gary jumped out of the back of the bus, and Gary is my next-door neighbor, and took off, and they're not supposed to do that. And my mom turns to me in front of the police officer and says, go pick a switch. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
they're calling that child abuse.
Yeah,
child.
I mean, and it was over with. It was over with right there, done. We never did that again or a couple other things. But we're not
right.
Instilling the life skills into these kids to understand a whole lot. And so when you say defund the police, they actually, in my observation, I think they actually think that it's like, okay, everything's up for grabs. Look at the data, and this is not just me. Look at the data of the uptick in shootings in 16, 17, 18-year-olds up to 21 in North Minneapolis and in St. Paul. Different races, not just black and Hispanic and Asian, but white too.
Yep, and Don, when you say these subliminal messages, as far as defunding the police, they hear this terminology. Adults who actually are highly educated with high cognitive ability still don't understand what defund the police means. So when the kids hear defund the police and all this, they go, man, these police ain't going to do nothing. With that being said, with the conversation around defunding the police, the morale within the police department is down because they say, then you guys don't even want us. We're not even going to go to the calls. That one of the shootings they had, it took, I think it was 15 minutes, 10 minutes till the individual got there. A person was shot, you know, and so we have to talk about everything, but the uptick in shootings. We just had one at the
I saw that.
KG was out there, KG Wilson. Shout out to KG Wilson on the front lines within our community, talking about this gun violence, and I got love for the brother. But I tuned into his live. It was like, I think, what was it, like 1:30, 2 in the morning, and three people shot, okay, inside. This is Minnesota.
Yeah.
This is 6% black people.
Right there.
What the hell is going on?
Yeah.
You know,
and I want to let everybody know, I didn't say this earlier, but this is a Blog Talk Radio. It's a call-in show. Our number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number here is 347-426-3904. So we accept all calls, suggestions, comments, criticisms, challenges. We have thick skin, and we invite listeners to call in. Again, that number is 347-426-3904 here on Our Black News. It's Saturday, the 26th of September. September is kind of whittling out, going away. It's kind of chilly outside. It doesn't matter what the temperature is, but I still have to mow the grass today. But I hope I catch it before it rains. Anthony, what is, you know the Minneapolis, the central neighborhood over there?
Sure.
What happened when they closed a couple schools over there? Because it seems to be like a ghost town.
Well, that's really, really the downward spiral of South Minneapolis, in my opinion. We closed. Well, and they did the same thing on the north side. You know, people don't realize, you know, they got Minneapolis Central. They got Bryant. They got Warrington. They closed all of those schools down, which was feeder schools for South Minneapolis, and people rallied around. But people don't remember that. They tried to get to north. And there was a guy on the school board that said, let's just burn it down. Burn it down. Mr. Don Samuels just said, let's just burn the school down. They really tried this whole
thing. What?
Yes.
And it went, Don Samuels?
Yes. Oh, man, you got to read that story. We came after him
burn
pretty hard. Yes.
He was on the school board, and they tried.
No, he was a city councilman. He was a city councilman. And he said, you know, and that had something to do with, see, this crime thing we're having in North Minneapolis is nothing new. But at the time he said that, in that whole area around North High and about a mile and a half radius around in North Minneapolis, there was utter chaos with the kids, the families. I mean, you're talking about a broke, poor community, basically.
Right.
With no options,
right.
No opportunity. And so that thing is.
They got the money, no options. There is opportunity, but they're strategically keeping it. The opportunity away from our community through individual.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, this is a black guy. This is a black guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's
this is a black man, okay, on the city council that said at one point, and the reason why we go to this historical contest is you don't understand your history. You don't understand where we are today.
Right.
And it's important that you understand where you are today and how the evolution of Jim Crow still evolves in something more ugly, more disastrous, and creates opportunity, but we miss it looking at the crisis. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So, you know, when he said that, it was just a fireball, and I'm not exaggerating, but it was a fireball of chaos. And his statement, I don't think he meant it. It's like the example out of malice, but he said, burn North Eye down. And there was no connection in the community with parents and the school. There is,
right.
Look at the numbers. There wasn't, and so he already knew in his mind, as that individual that Jonathan keeps speaking of, that, you know, no one's really going to care, but I'll have support from this side because this is what I said, and I meant it because of all the chaos. And it took a lot of people to really, and I don't think to this day he's ever apologized, ever.
And when they closed the schools, like I said, over here with Warrington, Bryant, and Central,
mm-hmm.
They closed the grade schools. They told Lincoln, wasn't that the junior high?
Yeah, Lincoln, that was a beautiful school.
Yeah. They closed all the feeder schools. And so what it is, it's just slowly by 1,000 cuts is what they're doing. And so it's continuing. This is why we're seeing where we're at. The schools play such a huge part down. As you know, when we grew up, they had strong principals at Bryant and Central. Ms. Joyce Jackson was just, I mean, kids were getting out of Minneapolis Central and going to Nebraska and going to the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, these kind of things that were happening with our neighborhood school, and all the people in the neighborhood were behind them, were behind what it was doing. And this is what we're missing now. Everything is so disjointed. Everything is so, okay, I got mine. I got my thing over here. I got my, well, why can't we work together to make it a stronger push? Because it's apparent that the powers that be seem to be against us. You know, defunding the police,
mm-hmm.
schools away. We still pay higher taxes for everything that we do.
Yes,
property
absolutely,
taxes,
absolutely.
And up and up. And what are we getting for our money?
Yeah,
so we can't just stand up. We need to stand up. And the school part is something that really, really bothers me, because to have these three schools gone from the South Minneapolis neighborhood, really just, along with the community centers we used to have, the neighborhood places, you know, where you could get jobs, like Don, you talked about at the Pillsbury House, that neighborhood house, the little community center, Phyllis Wheatley.
Yeah.
These things have been all marginalized instead of being on the forefront for our people.
But there's I'm sorry, Jonathan. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say real quick, when they closed down North and they closed down these schools, Lincoln, we got schools sitting within our own community. I'm talking about blocks. The kids can leave literally across the street, but there's a closed school all over.
Yeah.
We, like you said, we have come together and say, no, it's time to, oh, you got $550 million budget each year, okay? Much of that goes, you know, to admin and stuff like that. Okay, cool. But we have so many people, okay, in these roles getting this money who don't give a damn about our community, who don't care. And it doesn't got to play a part on the parents. Absolutely, okay? I do think parents, but I can't blame a kid. And I've been doing this work for a long time. I know you have too, Doc.
Mm-hmm.
I sit back and I've dealt with kids, right? My dad's in jail for life, Mason. My mom's a crackhead, okay? She sells our damn food stamps. I can't even eat. I'm hustling, and I can't even come to class, bro. I had to. That's what they say, Mason. I can't even come. Why? I'm like, why are you running late today? I don't have milk. My little sister's crying. My mom sold our wick to this dude down the block. My daddy's in jail. My uncle's coming in. He's sleeping on the couch. I'm sleeping on the floor. What do you think I need to do, Mason? The state ain't. Then the people say, well, don't even give them an extra milk. Don't give them an extra apple, Mason. I'm like, damn, I feel like I'm breaking the damn law. I'm going on my way to help. We're dealing with situations that need to be addressed, and some of the people within our community don't even have. When I tell a teacher, okay, what do you do for a kid whose mom's a crackhead, prostitute, and the dad has killed four people, he's in jail in Stillwater for the rest of his life, he's hungry as hell, and they just sold the wick. You got some money for it, they ask? Mason, where do we start?
Yeah.
So these are the real conversations that we have. We need to get to the forefront and say, no. We're going to keep Lincoln open. We're going to keep Warren open. We're going to keep North. And actually, we're going to put a lot of our funds in these communities. Yes, Southwest gets it. Okay.
Oh, yes, they do.
Southwest gets it, right?
Oh, yes, they do.
But the question is, we have these same conversations. Who's making the damn decisions to give it to Southwest and not us? And what you find out is it's people that look like you and me selling out.
Go ahead.
But when you get into the schools, you know, I've had a good friend who went through the ranks, teaching, principal, all the way through the ranks. So when he started school, he got put into a maybe, I guess, EBD or what they call some of the kids that are
emotional behavior disorder.
Yeah, the kids that aren't really bad, but they act out.
He's assistant principal, okay? Mm-hmm. And this teacher brings this kid in and said he's disruptive in the class.
Mm-hmm.
So the teacher says, I was acting up, and she wouldn't give me the cookie. And so he's acting up. And so my buddy says, here, son, here's the cookie. Is this what you want? He said, yes, I wanted the cookie like all the others.
Right. Well, yeah.
So he's being sent to the principal because the teacher won't give him the cookie like she gives everybody else.
You're right. We were talking about Harrison. I worked over at Edison. I worked over at all of the different places. And what you see is, you know, we're all human. Let's say that. We're all human. Let's start there. You might not want to give the kid the damn because you've been an asshole all day. Okay. Now I bring you down to the office because you messed up, and now this principal gives you the damn cookie. Okay. I understand. And then this is a good thing because I've given the damn cookie. Okay.
No, they're on his
seat. And then I say, okay, what's next? Are you ready to get back to work? And there's been times where the kids go back to work. But there's also the time where basically, thank you for the cookie, now my ass leaving for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
See you later. Go away. And I want to, you know, this is Our Black News. And again, that number to call is 347-426-3904. And it's right above on if you're watching Facebook Live. We would love for one of you to call in. You know, when you look historically in Minneapolis and St. Paul on what's happening and the leaders of the nonprofit communities and agencies, you know, and the ones that look like us, it's like, you know, you in the beginning when we first started doing this and throughout the 11-year span of this program, formerly the Ron and Don Show, we kind of went after folks quite a bit. And then after about the seventh or eighth year, you know, it was like, no one's going to do anything. No one cares if Comcast gives the Minneapolis Urban League $10,000 for their highway heavy construction program. And I'm at the press conference and I go, excuse me, where's your highway heavy training facility?
Right.
And they go, oh, you're being an ass. You know?
Right. Because you suggested an option or an opportunity for those to be able to work in our own community, make money. And this is another thing. They will give out hundreds of millions of dollars to violence prevention that doesn't prevent no violence, because the violence prevention people aren't at the 200 Club at the bar when they say, what'd you say with your crazy ass, and get to shooting into them.
I was going to say that. I'm glad you said that, because that particular unit of Minneapolis, the city of Minneapolis, the violence prevention, I mean, I think they're nice people. They're just out of their depth right now. And it's more of a celebratory kind of, you know, unit in the city of Minneapolis. Like, oh, yes, we have a violence prevention unit right down the hall in the basement to the left. And we work on violence. I'm saying that.
And then I ask him, well, now, how are you stopping? You know, we do, I should say, that there is Jamil Jackson. He has took up some of the fight within Minneapolis with the Freedom Fighters and whatever the cause is, you know, whatever other causes they're doing. I think they're doing an outreach throughout Minneapolis and walking through the city, right, and doing their thing. And, you know, they're going to get national attention. They're getting national attention. They were on, you know, the New York Times. Actually, I was 2 weeks ago, and then they were on it right after. And what we're seeing in Minneapolis is a lot of people are not understanding, right? We know, but they don't understand why the disparities are so bad. They don't understand why per capita they want to call Minneapolis Murderapolis again. This is simply because when we ask the questions, you, me, Anthony, when we say to them, where's the training facilities? Okay, you want to do this project, you get $10,000, but can Black folks actually work on the project? And if so, can we create a system in place? Or when these groups come, so I ask the city council or whoever gets this money, I say, okay, what does your crime prevention actually look like? Because it can't look like, and I'm not disrespecting anyone, because this is what I do as well sometimes. I hear of a shooting, there's a shooting, okay? When you go into crime prevention, okay, you got to prevent the crime.
Mm-hmm.
How do you prevent the crime of Yaya shooting Tyrone because Yaya's upset that Tyrone threw down a gang?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even a gang. The gang member says, the leaders, we don't even know them. They're in it quick. These kids don't have any other options. So now this goes into the prevention part. Don, you touched on it. The damn training facility. We get these kids at 12 years old, 13, 14 years old. So Yaya ass is so damn tired, he don't even want to run up the block because he's seen somebody do sign language signs that he felt offended by. You know, sit up there. The deaf guy got shot up. He did A-OK in the blood. The Crips shot him up. Oh, shit. I ain't no shit. You know, you were saying A-OK to the bus driver. We shot your ass up because we thought that was the wrong game.
And that's that. No. Keep going. No, I was just going to say.
That's where our community is.
And it was very interesting because that you said something about the deaf person who used sign language. Do you know how many deaf kids, girls and boys in our community are walking around or have hearing issues that use sign language? And this is not the first time I've heard of those kids getting beat up, especially in North and South Minneapolis and St. Paul. And it's not gang signs, but by the first blow, there's no way to negotiate or even have a conversation. And this guy, you know, obviously has, you know, might not be able to speak. They're getting jumped for no reason, you know?
Right. And it ain't the first time. I've heard of this many times where kids actually are missing their buses. They're trying to communicate with other o'clock, and if I say damn A-OK, I can get my ass shot, you know? And so now you're not even speaking. You're hindering people. And this is the reality that we're living in. It's almost hell for some of these kids, you know? And the prevention, giving money to, for prevention, when you actually have no strategic plan for prevention for these incidents, makes me wonder, do you guys actually, and this is why Republicans go into it, go look at Democratic cities. You know, I absolutely love some of the liberal ideas. I love where naturally black people are progressive because of our skin color in America.
I'm gonna have to disagree with that, but keep going.
Well, I think as a culture we're progressive because what they call progression civil rights. They call progression being able to damn freaking vote. And the reason, and they, oh my gosh, they're so progressive. They want everybody to vote. Okay, it's not really that case. But this is where I call it. This is where my issue is.
Okay,
we have these cities who claim that we're progressive with minority people, but we have the most gang violence, we got the most shootings, we got all the most critical, dangerous categories that happen within our communities within these Democratic cities, and this is because of this bamboozlement of black leaders getting this anti-violence money, prevention money, and coming up to Yaya's been shot with their cell phones and with their shirts on and say, we're crime prevention, as the person getting put in the body bag. So you know, it's hundreds of millions of dollars, John. We said it.
Oh, yeah.
Hundreds.
It's millions.
Millions
of dollars going to folks that, you know, go out there and are visual. See, but the city, there's a psychology behind that, Jonathan and Anthony, because if the city, needs publicly the people to see that, so they can say, when their mainstream residents come to them and say, what are you doing about the violence? Well, didn't you read the Star and Tribune? We had our orange shirts or green shirts out here doing this, this, and that in the community. Because it's not going to get fixed right away, but we have people on it. So they can pivot everything over to this group. So if that group fails, then the fingers get pointed at them. Historically, every street group that was not issued a flak jacket, a 9mm, or a Glock, whatever, has historically failed. So money, massive amounts of cash, the Empowerment Zone, Northside Achievement Zone, what's that one on Lindale over there? God, it's right at the tip of my tongue. There's another agency over there. I can't think of the name, but you'll know it if I figure it out here by 3 days when I'm on the 3 days from now on the toilet.
You called me to say that was the day.
Yeah. Emerge. Thank you. You gave me a keyword. Thank you. Emerge are over there, and they're getting big money. And what they're doing with it has yet to be seen. But, you know, their executive directors and their upper echelon staff are living really nice. Again, I have no problem with that. But can you get, for every person you have making over $50,000 a year at your agency, can you have at least one person in our community start to make $25,000 a year that was underemployed or unemployed? Can you put that formula into your agency? Because you will create a ring of wealth and sustainability. But that's not the model. The model is to do, you can use our computer labs to do your resumes, but we don't have really anybody that's trained in writing to tell you what a good resume is, but we'll send you to the Word program. You can download a template and type over stuff, okay? And
right,
still, it
right,
might not
right,
be right. So
right.
It's inept. Our training is inept in every area, and it's seen, but when you approach these people from the Minneapolis Urban League to the NAACP or anybody else that says they represent black folks or they have an agency that's supposed to help children or whatever with education, is that they're not interested because they would have to give you a slice of their pie.
Yes.
And so the people at the state, the people at the city, the people at the foundations have their hand-picked colored folks that they're going to spend money with all the time based on some bogus outcome. Because what happens if they put $100 million on the street and we reduce our problems from our issues from 100% down to 10%? Well, if that ever happens, there's a bunch of agencies that are going to have to close. So this is a bread and butter thing, man. It continues on, bread and butter. Make
it's
that money.
It's almost like three. It's almost like three-part mantra. I sit back and I always question the motives of these individuals. And you know, they would probably say I'm an individual like that. But the problem is, it still ain't made no money, Don. And the problem is because they strategically cheat me out. So now, where now I will be making big money because I started for-profit businesses. I'm now you force my hand, right? And so now that when we have the conversations of trying to bring generational wealth to our community, and you make say you can make $50,000. You know, right now with inflation coming, because we know that the Fed, the Federal Reserve, said it's okay. Jerome Powell, actually, and them said it was okay to do inflation. Now that $50,000 looks like $35,000, okay, with the taxes on top of it, $27,000 after it's all done. Then you got mandatory health care, insurance costs. You're at sitting at $13,000. You vacation. You ain't got much. Two weeks of sick time. Working with kids, okay. This is because it's strategically in place for us to be actual. Hate to use the term, play. Okay,
basically.
And so now, when Mason says, another thing, he's been trying to put training facilities left or right, get people trained, get them that money, right? For some reason, we can't get that started, and it ain't him. He's trying his ass off. The city council. We got people that are not going hard enough, and then they get mad. So when I say enough is enough, I'm shutting it down. I'm tired of it. I'm shutting it down because I get so frustrated when we have the plans, we have the proposals, we have the basic buildings, we have the knowledge, the understanding, and we have the manpower within the North Side. I went over and told, oh, it's a damn pandemic, okay, whether you believe it or not, it is. I was over at, this was 3 days ago.
Okay.
I'm driving down Broadway. I look to the left of me, Broadway and Lindale. They call that, AKA, that's the murder station. That's the nickname for it.
Yeah.
Everybody knows it. At Merwin's Liquor, you look at Merwin's Liquor right in the, I'm talking about a vacant building over there that Minneapolis, I don't know who the hell built that. I think Minneapolis built that big ass building. It's talking about this, the Burger King still messed up, but you got almost 400 people sitting in the damn parking lot, okay? 400 people. Our age, well, oh yeah, actually, our age, your age, my age, younger age, bottles of vodka, liquor, guns out, weed, selling crack, they got prostitutes all over the bus stop field, they doing lap dance, it's going down at the murder station. Let's just say that.
Now, wait, you just said something. Is there back when a few years back, like in the early 2000s, the murder station was the Honeybee station off Washington there. Did they change location?
They changed location.
Oh, man. No. They have another murder station. The scene you described, I'm thinking about it in my head and remembering after I left.
You said the Honeybee.
Yeah, the Honeybee station with the little honeycomb out. Yeah.
Yeah, it's called Holiday Gas Station now.
Oh, I didn't see that's how long it's been since I've been over there. But I was like, dang, because you go there, man, you know, back when we were young, we'd go pull up in there and all kinds of stuff was going on. Okay.
It's a ghost zone now. They don't even go over there. You better not go over that damn bridge.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go over the bridge, trust me.
No. But what I was saying was we have so many people sitting at the Merwin Liquor, I'm talking about able, ready to work. They're working already. I'm watching them sell drugs there. Oh, they're making big money. You know, they got all types of stuff going on. Police ain't stopping shit. They're all around. There's almost 15 police sitting around at the gas station, at the Walgreens, buy Tuck Foods. No one's convinced. I'm watching. I just sit there and amaze. I just sit there and I watch them. And so now, I become the bad guy when I say, you know what, you guys? I want you guys to each make dollars an hour. I need to train you. We're going to put you through X. We're going to put you through, and Lewis King can put it together. Lewis in a damn dustpan the north side.
No.
You don't got to go to school for it. You don't need a fucking degree. Pardon my language again. I'm sorry. You don't need a degree to be able to sweep and clean up dust, okay? Fix windows. You can do it on YouTube. I can teach all the people off of YouTube how to actually install a window. And we got Lewis King who can give them the accredited program to do so. But see, all of us, I don't want to work with him. I don't want to work with him. And for me personally, I can go on the record because Lewis knows he's going to be paying. We're going to Capitol Grill. On Lewis, I told him, big credit card. You better bring it out because we made a personal bet. We did. He hit me with a medium rare.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And I hit him with well done double porterhouse, light asparagus with light salt and pepper because he made a personal bet about Donald Trump. I said he was going to win. I said Donald Trump's going to win. I looked at the Electoral College. They can get all you guys to vote. You guys actually can make a world record on how many people voted, and you'll say, we lost the popular vote. And it's the Electoral College. They don't even understand it. He's already passed 270. I counted it out. He's got 306 again. 309. If he has 309, there's 538 votes.
Yeah.
That means one.
Yep. Hey, we have a caller that's been holding for a minute. I'd like to get him, he or she in. Caller, welcome to Our Black News. What's your name and question?
Well,
hello.
Interesting conversation you have.
How you doing?
It's Pianki calling out of the Midwest.
Okay.
But
welcome.
You talking about the education and with Black Americans. Students and their performers about to say that you probably have reached the pinnacle of the amount that you're going to get out of the way things is. The CEO for Wells Fargo made a statement the other day that the pool of Black males that could be pulled from in order to fill positions at Wells Fargo just isn't there. It's very limited.
Yeah.
And then I want to ask you another question. Being that Blacks are so loyal to the Democrats, why is it that it's Democrats that's using Syrian refugees to redevelop Detroit?
Oops.
You talking about the Clintons, Obama? You talking about the Democrats. And Syrian refugees is finding Detroit a paradise while everybody else is finding it a disgrace.
Yeah.
So what is going on? And look, they're talking about bringing in, if they haven't already, half of the Syrian population into the area. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, that's very interesting because I remember I went to Detroit a few years back with my wife, and I was amazed. All the neighborhoods, first of all, and some of these huge, beautiful homes that sit in shambles on these beautiful big streets. And the person that we went to visit, she was saying that, yeah, you know, people just break into them and live in there. Just gorgeous neighborhoods. And I could see how someone from Syria coming here and moving in one of those, working, fixing it up, because they're basically giving them away.
They come in here and do this because they know how to do it. Just like when I go look around people doing roofing, like the guy next door is putting his chimney up, all Mexican. They come up here, they got skills.
And no college degrees.
No. They come up here with skills and they learn how to do hands-on things that they can survive with. And that's what we're not doing in our school. That's why anybody can come over here and beat us. They come over here and knock us out, no problem.
And I want to touch on that real quick because, you know, they're using Syrian refugees. Being that Minnesota is a refugee state, we've seen this actually implemented on various levels throughout the Minnesota Midwest. We see the Somalian population over south with the – and nothing wrong. I love communities coming in, building their own. But what happens is white America – and this is what we got to talk about. White America is so damn comfortable with these groups of saying, we're sticking together. We don't give a damn if you want us to go to college. And so black folks go talk to what Mr. Tucker was saying. Too many of us are trying to be accepted and not respected. You want to get into these institutions and Malcolm X said it. But you know what? No, not even Malcolm X. I ain't even going to go there. Their Pope, their favorite guy, Martin Luther King, said, I think God brought my people into the burning house. Because when we go into what we need to do, and I want to go back to solutions because I can talk about this all damn day.
Mm-hmm. Blacks ain't doing it, though. They're not doing it. And heck, if every other word that come out of some of these leaders' mouth and groups' mouth is damn whites, how do you think they're going to feel? Take that. Now, all whites are not like that. We know that. And then, too, you got blacks that walk around with T-shirts on written on the back, kill whitey. So you got that coming from both sides. But the thing is, black folks got to educate their own kids. Nigerians educate their own kids. You can't depend on other people to educate your kids because now you talk about competing against theirs. But these immigrants that's coming in here is pushing black folks to the side. Now, I can say one thing positive. Here in the St. Louis, I'm up here in St. Louis now, and I've seen some black landscapers, you know, how they have a pickup truck and they have a trailer behind it and they pull in lawnmowers and stuff. And I stopped and talked to some. And I asked them, I said, how's business? He said, man, we got more business than we know what to do with. Then I asked him, I said, well, I thought Mexicans was doing this. You know what he said? He said, Trump ran them out.
Wow.
And, we need to talk about the Platinum Plan for Black America. And so this is really going to put pressure.
Keep going.
This is going to put pressure because now they're saying, this is the argument they just had. You guys are so slow. That's what they're saying. We're so damn slow. We actually are screaming about against mass incarceration and the damn man that locked all our daddies, not y'all daddies, but my daddies, my era, them did that era, up for, I'm talking about predatory offenses for maybe a little crack rock, a joint, or something like that. We actually, now he's our nominee, and he actually said 3 months ago, you're not even black. He was telling Charlamagne Tha God, you're not even black, and tell black folks, hey, black, if they don't vote for me. Then you got Donald Trump saying, Black America, going on reparations, let's get the platinum plan going, $500 billion. You know what $500 billion looks like to 50 states in urban? If I got the north side, he said $500 billion. Minnesota's in the top 10. If you give the north side $5 billion and I get some of it, oh, you guys, it's probably now, brother. Oh, you're a big brother. If I get, let me get $2 million. Oh, I'm going to have so many damn training facilities. I'm talking about solar technology training. Oh, you only got to do a 6 to 8 week class, and I'm teaching you all the shit on YouTube. Okay, you're going to be an expert. And anytime you run into a damn problem, we'll have some foremen out there. We'll have some people that are professionals in these realms. But pull up the damn YouTube on your phone. You can't figure it out. Stop, pause, rewind it. If you don't get it again, rewind it again. Oh, we got to get this stuff fixed because you know what we are doing? Black folks, and this is another thing we have to admit, we are the grandchild children and seed of the individuals who built this damn country. I don't give a damn who came over here and did all this. The infrastructure that was built, I don't care about the railroad tracks, who built the White House, who built Wall Street. It's actually on paper historically with black folks. We know what the hell to do, but we ran into the house, burning, asking for water, okay? We ran in the burning house asking for water and help because of the fire. What? No. You better get outside, start your own damn house with sprinklers in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? With sprinklers in it so we can actually combat these issues. And right now, and I'm glad your brother said it, we do have to figure out our communication because of our frustration in our community on a macro level with Caucasians. Being that I am biracial, my mom is white, blonde hair, blue eyes. My daddy is black from Chicago, former GD. a descendant of slavery. I was with my grandma today. We were talking about my great grandma. She picked cotton. Okay, everybody. Uncle Pozo, they got hung up. They got hung. The KKK killed them. So I got two damn. I got two damn sides, right? They even on my white side say I'm radical a bit. Maybe I might. And on the black side, they say that too. But we have to now formulate a conversation and a real conversation. We can't say, you know, because we're yelling at all these different groups too. And the white folks, really, white America is working with these groups. They're working with Mexicans on the low. They're fighting against ICE. They're saying no wall, okay? But they're not screaming reparations.
No, never. Okay, never.
And so now we have to start saying, okay, let's build these training facilities. Let's work together. Don, let's formulate a plan. And my brother in St. Louis, I don't know your name, but we got to come together, connect, call in the show, put proposals together, go to City Hall one that time together to a meeting and say, let's just try it. Let's see if they'll be able to give us training facilities and money and not just for crime prevention.
I agree 100% with you on all that, and it's very important, but we have to figure out where we need to start in actually developing the plan to even – I mean, there's a lot of plans out there. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. But what happens when those agencies and those individuals in our community are called upon, it depends on who they return a call to, and a lot of them don't call anybody, you know. And we have about 4:10:30, about 3 minutes left, 2 minutes left here of the show. And I'd like to wrap up by saying next week, Lacey Johnson, the Congressional District 5, Minneapolis, Richfield, you know, pieces of Golden Valley and other areas in Minneapolis and surrounding suburbs, he sent me a text. He says, I really want to be on the show. I'd like to talk with you guys. And wait. I'll be really honest. What?
Well, I think that's great.
Yeah, and but see, I want to tell you what I told him. And under 2 minutes left before 10:30, I told him, I says, well, we're gonna be asking some really tough questions, and I'm not gonna tell you what they are now because that would prepare you, and I want you to come unprepared because the 5th Congressional District is unprepared. You know, there's too much going on there, and we have a lot of questions, and you're going to have to either sink or swim. Again, this show does not endorse any political candidate from either side, and we've had both. And then the week after, Lacey, the candidate, I don't have her name right in front of me. My computer is actually off, but she's the one who won the primary against Raymond Dean for Minneapolis.
Okay.
And so I met her. And she said that she'd be very interested in being on the show, and it's just a matter of connecting, and we should get that done over the weekend here. So next week,
also, Don,
yeah.
I know you guys, real quick, we only got a little bit of time. Also, I talked to Royce. He actually wants to do a show with all of us coming up here soon about conversations. And like you said, we do not let people know what we're going to say. And we're going to get you right out when you're not ready or prepared. So he said he also wants to come, and he wants to come. So we're going to have a jam packed schedule coming up.
Yeah, Anthony, thank you, man. Appreciate you being here. Plan on next Saturday because I think that we should all, you know, put Lacey through the ringer because he's not going to watch this, and we need to ask him some questions to make sure he can.
I think he might have just tuned in, Don. I think he just tuned in. So, Lacey, how are you doing? Thanks for tuning in.
And, Lacey, we hope you can be here with us next Saturday because that's when the show is, on Saturday mornings at 9:30, and we're prepared to have you on next week and anybody else running for office. And still, I can't get any of the NAACP or the Minneapolis Urban League representatives to come on the air with us or anybody.
Why? What are they afraid of?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, and I asked Steve Belton, the president of the Urban League, I mean, you'll go on Al Flowers' program, but you won't come on this program, okay? Because I know why, but I'm not going to embarrass or demonize anybody. But you should be able to come here and have a conversation. Is all I'm saying. Conversation. With
right.
that said,
hey,
well, it's 10:30. I appreciate everybody on Facebook Live that listens, Twitter, LinkedIn, and all our our current listeners on Blog Talk Radio, where this show originates from. Again, the podcast from the radio show will be available at blogtalkradio.com. You can go there. You will not see anything. It's just the audio. This is just something convenient for Facebook. But we'd like to thank everybody for listening. Jonathan, thank you for tuning in and being here. You're making me nervous at that last minute stuff. And we're going to let James Brown take us away.